Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolten.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic, hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you've all been cleared to know the truth. And, I've got some truth tonight, Josh.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. I'm up for truth. I like transparency.
Transparency is good. Sky, though, I want to talk to Sky for just a second. I want to tell you a little story that my dad shared with me. Believe it or not, I started to worry. I wondered if I had enough class. But it was Saturday night, which I guess makes it all right. And you say, baby, have you got enough gas? Oh, yeah, little red Corvette. Ooh, baby, you're much too fast. Yes, because, right, she's a little red Corvette, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You got.
Yeah.
Now you got Sky and Lola. Lola Sky. Lola Sky. Sounds like a Neil Diamond song.
She's a Sky Vet.
Sky Vet.
I guess.
Ooh.
So.
You know, I don't know if I've ever said this on this show, but growing up.
Wait. Now, there's a line between transparency and too much.
So. Oh, no, it's okay. This is okay. Right. Growing up, I always wanted a Corvette, and I always wanted flying cars. So this, you know, Lola would have been the car for me growing up.
Oh, Lola would totally be the car for you then, yeah. Well, you know, it's what, there's still about 8 months left in 2015 to get flying cars. So, you know.
I think we're on our way.
Future's here. But, well, why don't you let people know, you know, just so everybody out there can understand, this is the part of the show where we talk about the title of the episode, when it aired, and a little brief about it so that you can, you know, decide if you want to continue on with this particular episode of the show. So why don't you tell people what show we're talking about tonight?
Well, you definitely want to continue on with this episode because we are talking about Love in the Time of Hydra. I feel like this is S.H.I.E.L.D. After Dark or something.
You make it sound so much nicer than it actually is.
Well, you know, you gotta get people listening to the show. See, that's what you do at the beginning, and then you slowly tell how it's gone downhill for them. But Love in the Time of Hydra aired on March 24th, 2015. This is the 14th episode of Season 2. Closer and closer to the end. This one was written by Brent Fletcher and directed by Jesse Bochco. Now, what exactly is real? Is it Coulson's S.H.I.E.L.D.? Is it Gonzalez's S.H.I.E.L.D.? Is it Agent May's face? Is it Agent 33's face? Real may be a certain point of view when we try to understand everyone's motives this week. Now Grant Ward is back, and he's trying to help our mysterious and scarred former Hydra Agent 33 with the therapeutic sessions to increase her self-esteem through inner reflection, coping with trauma, and, of course, torture of her former employee, Bakshi. No, employer. He's an employer, yeah.
Employer.
But I don't know if they actually paid her. Do you have to pay people that are brainwashed? Or can you just say, oh, yeah, I gave you the check. It should be in your bank.
Yeah. Your compliance will be rewarded. You know,
can we
there
get
you
compliance
go.
Bonuses it's at the end of the year. So anyway, Grant Ward, you know, he's going to help her with this therapy so she feels better about herself. Now, I'm not sure if HOA, if your insurance, what do you call the insurance these days? Does it cover that? I don't know. Is Obamacare cover therapeutic sessions from being brainwashed by Hydra? I don't know.
I don't deal with insurance in my house.
I don't either. So there might be a copay on that. But all right. Well, so Hunter now, he's been just relaxing, you know, having a little vacation in the bathroom, handcuffed to the sink. But he finally meets Mac's real bosses, Director Gonzalez and the real S.H.I.E.L.D., not to be confused with the real Ghostbusters. And they are not happy with Coulson and his secrets. Hunter's really not happy with any of them, including Bobby, who now seems very loyal to this newly revealed group that we just discovered this week. Skye's not too happy about her new situation either, in which Coulson has given her her very own relaxing cabin that she...
In the woods.
Yeah, that she can't leave. Who's right? Who's real? Who's unhappy? Who's Kara? All this and more on this week's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Wow. They just crammed a lot of stuff into this particular episode, and it wasn't necessarily as clean as it has been in the past, I think.
No. And we can discuss this, but I was kind of okay with that. I kind of like that they threw us into this big mix of things that can be splattered everywhere, and we can follow these trails to figure out what mess they've come up with now. That was a very strange analogy of this episode, but
mixing metaphors or something. Well, I've got a good idea of where to start. But before we get to that, I just want to remind everybody that if you, the listener, are going to be out in Anaheim in the middle of April here, attending the Star Wars Celebration, Josh and I will be attending as well. And if you're a fan of this podcast, which hopefully you are because you're listening, we'd like you to try to find us. So check out our Facebook page and our Twitter feed as we get a little bit closer here into April. We will be posting some more information about how to find us or some of the best places to try to find us. But we're actually going to have some pins to hand out. We've got little, what do you call them, like lapel pins, I guess?
Yeah, kind of, you know, buttons.
Buttons.
But they're nice. They are good lapels pins because they're nice and small right on your lapel there.
Right, and some people call them pins, and some people call them badges. I think if you're out of the States, you might call them badges or buttons, but they're about an inch. And they're going to have our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast logo on them. So if you find us, let us know that you listen to the show, and we'll give you a pin. So we'll be revealing those shortly within the next week or so on our Facebook page. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, and I love meeting people, so don't be afraid to come up and say something to me, you know, not, you know, like stick them up or hand me your wallet, something like that. But, you know, hello would be fine.
Your compliance will be rewarded. So you can go up and say hi to Josh and then I'll just hand you the pin. I don't talk to people. I'm going to have my big vat of hand sanitizer there and I'm just going to sit
just
in the
throw
corner.
It at him from a distance, you know.
All right. Well, I actually have a good idea of where I want to start, and that's going to be telling everybody that the title of this particular episode, Love in the Time of Hydra, comes from the book title, or is an homage to the book title, Love in the Time of Cholera, which is also a movie. I guess it was a book first, and then they turned it into a movie. I read the synopsis of the movie because I haven't seen it, and I can honestly say I really do not see any parallels between that story and this episode, other than the fact that there are two people in a kind of really bizarre relationship in both. The two Hispanic people in Love in the Time of Cholera, and then Agent Ward and Agent 99, Agent 33.
Agent 99 was...
Every time we say Agent 33, I just have flashbacks of Barbara Feldon from Get Smart.
That was her... I'm guessing her grandmother, right? Because her mother would have been Agent 66, and then she's Agent 33. And then her daughter will be Agent 11, I think. Is that how that works? They're all just multiples of each other? Is that...
Yeah, well, or they all add up to 100. I guess that's what it is. So... if anybody out there has actually either read Love in the Time of Cholera or seen the movie and see any other parallels, please feel free to write into us at shield@randomchatter.com or post on our Facebook at facebook.com/agentspodcast because I'm interested to know if there's really anything else going on there. But since I brought up this whole thing with Ward and 33, why don't we talk about them for a little bit? I think that since the episode opens with them, and does it, are they the, no, they're, I don't think they're the last sequence in the episode, but they are a good chunk of the episode, their story. And it was great to see Ward again. I really enjoyed that. And I like that we really got a lot more out of Agent 33. I thought from a storytelling standpoint, it was a really interesting way to do it. I think I counted five different actresses. Oh wait, six different actresses and an actor who played Agent 33 throughout this episode.
Ooh, nice.
Now, two actors, so, right? Wasn't because the original doctor that fixed her face.
Oh, that's right. Okay,
and then yeah, and so then eight. The soldier, so, right?
Yeah. So the those two guys, and then May and Sky, and then there were two models from the magazine, and then the female. Talbot's wife and the female Air Force
right
officer.
Oh, nice.
So
I wonder why she didn't do Talbot. She should have done General Talbot walking out there.
Again, that damn mask. It was, but it from a, you know, from a acting standpoint, I mean, I think it it's really interesting because you got Ming-Na playing the beginning of the character's arc, and then you had Chloe Webb playing the middle of the character's arc, and then you had the original actress who played Agent 33 kind of finishing it up. So they kind of spread this out and had to have a number of different people, you know, try to act like the same person. And I think just from a collaborative sort of acting standpoint, that sounds like a really cool exercise for them to work on. Plus, you had to have the guy that played Grant Ward, you know, he had to be playing off all three of these different, well, multiple different actresses, you know, as if it was the same person all the time, which, you know, that's got to be a little bit difficult as well. So
I thought he did a good job with that, and so did the other actresses. So now, do you think we're going to see the original actress? And you know what? I apologize. I didn't even look up her name, but who played? Do you think we're going to see her more often now?
Maya Stoyan, I believe is her
name.
Yeah. I would think that the next time we see her, the next time we see Agent 33. It will be that original actress. Now, so my thought is because we, like I said, we had this kind of mini arc for Agent 33 for Kara, for her role in this particular episode. She went from being this kind of sycophantic person, you know, and all the way through to apparently accepting herself as, you know, who she is, with, you know, scars and all. What's an interesting path that Ward led her down. I'd like to talk a little bit more about Ward's involvement in that. But, yeah, I think we probably will see that actress playing this character again. I feel this is a great character to put on the show. She's got the ability to have up to three faces stored in her mask at a time. She can do, you know, it's like having a female Zartan from G.I. Joe. On the show, and it adds a whole other element into the show because now that she's got a fully operational mask, you know, she could be anybody, right? So,
yeah,
maybe she'll impersonate Bobby later in the season.
Well, that would be. I like this character a lot, and I like her sort of self-esteem problems, and I like just the whole idea. It adds a more an interesting character to it again. As opposed to just some kind of, you know, nameless, generic character. And I like the interaction with Ward. And now, speaking of Ward, I think I'm pretty convinced now. It just takes me a long time to be convinced of anything on a show like this because, you know, there's so many lies and deceit and double agents, triple agents, all kinds of stuff like that. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring up Trip again. Sorry. I'm pretty convinced that that Ward is now pretty much off his rocker and definitely not a good guy working for or with any one particular group of good guys like Coulson. Or
so you got that sense as well, huh?
Yeah. And again, I guess it was pretty obvious many episodes ago, but sometimes they throw these twists in, you know, said we didn't know all along that he'd been doing something. But yeah, I'm pretty convinced.
So tell me what you thought of Ward's motivation for working, or not necessarily working with, but helping Kara through her issues that she was having, her identity crisis, basically.
Well, I thought a lot about this, and it seemed as if he was doing it in gratitude for helping save his life, you know, back when Sky mm-hmm. shot him. And right. That's kind of what I think he even implied to her. But to me, I think that there's a bigger picture. I think he wants to use her in some way. And maybe he doesn't know what that way is yet, or maybe he does have something in mind, something planned that we don't, you know he's about to attempt. And in order to do that, he's making her very loyal to him. You know, he's building this connection that's going to be really strong. It is. You could see by the end of the episode how strong this connection was. I mean, she is, you know, in the middle of the episode, she was just trying to give him what she thought he wanted, you know, by looking like Sky and snuggling up to him and really.
Is that pumpkin pancakes with some pecan syrup?
Yeah, that's what he likes. But then by the end, I mean, she's really loyal to him. I mean, he has brought her through this, gauntlet of emotional pain that she's had from being scarred like this by Hydra. Or I guess not by Hydra, but because of Hydra.
Well, physically and emotionally scarred.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yes, both.
And emotionally scarred by Hydra, physically scarred by S.H.I.E.L.D., May, specifically. I went through another step with him. So I too, at the beginning, he basically, exposition, when they're in the the diner, and he's like, thanks for saving me and nursing me back to health. You know, you're a cool chick and everything like that. But then he gets to talking about
what is this, like John Travolta from Grease? you're a cool chick. Thanks for helping me. All right, sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Then he gets to a point where he's kind of talking to her about himself, and he's like, I know how bad it can be because I too was hollowed out. And he kind of uses that he was, basically he was brainwashed without being brainwashed, by an indoctrination process. Crud. Who's mentor in S.H.I.E.L.D.? John
Garrett.
So Garrett, basically took him at a vulnerable time and, treated him kindly and, fed him and clothed him and trained him and like you said, kind of hollowed him out until he was ready to be filled up with all the lies and the hate and everything like that. And I'm like, wow, maybe Ward has changed, because here he is. He sees somebody else that's damaged goods. I mean, emotional baggage, damaged goods, total mess, just like he was. And he honestly really wants to help her out. And then he says, and then I found my family and we talked it all out and everything was good. And I'm like, you lying piece of scum. Oh my gosh. So, he kind of just glosses over the whole part that he killed them, burned the house to the ground. So I think, like you said, he's got this ulterior motive, and I think he's really trying to do the same thing to her that was done to him and create a weapon, someone that is reliant on him and will respond, basically only to him, but, will also jump when he says how high.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in all fairness, he did he did work it out with his family. I mean,
well, he did, but
No more issues. He has no more issues with his family.
And they're good. You know, should he really tell her the truth? I don't know. But, I mean, I don't know. I just see this. Basically, I saw a nice guy up to that point, and then as soon as he started the end of his thing, I just saw, like, Danny from The Shining behind his eyes. Like, he just, he's nuts. I mean, and he is, and they're both nuts, and it's great. They're made for each other, so, because she has some serious, I mean, I don't know that, I won't say she's cured. She's got some serious emotional issues as well, but, you know, like Ward said, he's not a meat and potatoes kind of guy, so. He likes, you know, a little crazy on the side, I guess. I don't know.
and pecan syrup.
And did you not hear about the pecan syrup? Not pecan syrup, but pecan syrup. So that's cool. So, what do you think they're going to do to poor Sunil Bakshi?
Boy, I think really all she was interested in is just torturing.
Now, it seemed like they had already started working on him. I mean, so when they pulled the tape off his mouth, he asked if his compliance would be rewarded. And I didn't know if that was him really having been hypnotized a little bit or if he's just, like, you know, verbally sparring with them, you know. Like,
you mean when he said his – when he said, will my compliance be rewarded?
Yeah.
That part?
Yeah.
I think he was trying to – go along with it, or what would you say? Almost saying like, hey, if I do what you say, you know, am I going to be okay? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
okay. I couldn't tell if he was asking, if he had been brainwashed or if he was trying to just be like, I'm just a tough guy. So I'm going to, like, you know, say something like that to.
No, I think he didn't sound sarcastic to me. He sounded like you just, he sounded kind of desperate, okay. Actually.
Well, I mean, they got his eyes taped open all Clockwork Orange style there, so it was not pretty.
No, it was not pretty.
So
yeah, hey, I wonder what they got. Like, can you buy that brainwashing DVD on Amazon, or you know, where do you? Because they just had it. I don't know where he would have had it, but maybe it's on Netflix.
I wouldn't doubt it. They got all sorts of stuff there. I'm thinking they might have just downloaded it, you know, from hailhydra.org. You know, it's they've got everything else branded. You know, why would they not have that out there as well? So,
hailhydra.org. .org, huh? It's not a com. It's a
right. Well, you know, they're an organization. They're trying to, you know, do it properly. So, while we're talking about Ward and Agent 33, anything you want to bring up about the stealing of Bakshi, the infiltration into the Air Force with Talbot or anything?
You know, I like the idea. I like the scene. I thought it was a little bit easy for them getting in there. I'm not sure it would have been quite so easy, but I mean, they're good, you know, especially Ward. Ward knows exactly what he's doing, what to do. And you've seen clearly it can't be that hard to infiltrate, you know, the Talbot's office. I think Coulson did it once too, didn't he? When he was meeting with Talbot earlier in the season. I think that was a scene.
Yes. It was the senator. It was Ward's brother, I believe. Well, maybe it was Talbot as well.
I think Coulson. I can't remember. Anyway, there. So I mean, you know, having skills comes along with being high level agents in S.H.I.E.L.D. So I'm sure Ward could have done it, but you know, kind of a drag that they had to kill a couple of the soldiers.
Yeah, it's nice that it helped play Talbot a little bit more into S.H.I.E.L.D.'s hands. You know, kind of. As a backhanded sort of way, you know, it seems like Talbot is more trusting of Coulson now just because he's been messed over with this mask again.
Yeah, so. That's, yeah, he does seem trusting of Coulson now. He doesn't, I don't know. I guess it didn't turn around that fast, and Coulson and him have kind of been working together for a little while now, but now it just seems like almost like a partnership.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I disliked a little, it was funny. I mean, there were funny sequences, especially where he's Talbot's going down the line of the women asking them, you know, how many times have I gotten your name right? And she's like, never. They kind of made Talbot out to be a bit of a buffoon. I mean, they have done that with him in the past as well.
Yeah.
It just seemed like it was a lot broader in this one where he's, you know, he's talking about the riding lawnmower, and then he goes way overboard talking about the damn mask and then drawing the gun on his wife and stuff. It's a fine line, I think, in playing stuff funny but believable and falling over that line into sort of parody. And I think they might have crossed that line just a hair.
I agree with that character anyway, because that character has, and it's not the first time they've done it. I think they did it a little bit when he, you know, they knocked him out or something, and he woke up in the back of the car.
Yeah, that's the scene that I'm thinking about from the previous episode, right?
Mm-hmm, right. So it's just that character has been kind of the tough guy, you know, the really tough, hard, you don't want to mess with him kind of guy. And if you were going to continue messing with him like Coulson did, then you better be prepared to deliver, which Coulson has, right? So, yeah, I agree with you. I think they went a little bit too far with that character.
The other thing,
you got to use other characters for that purpose, not the ones that are supposed to be intimidating.
Right. Well, and what they've basically done with this character now is, if Coulson can infiltrate his office, and if Ward and 33 can infiltrate his place of business there and just steal a prisoner, I mean, he is completely ineffectual. So basically they've taken any sting or bite out of this character that they can use in the future, which maybe that's what they're going for with him, just to play him kind of as a comedic role. But at one point I felt that he was a threat. And now he's just kind of a goofball. So maybe that's what they're going for, but I don't feel that they've done that before, so I don't know. But I guess we'll see as time plays out on that. So I would like to also now turn to the real Shield and talk about them a little bit. I've got a soundbite here I want to play that will lead us into the next discussion.
We found a Shield, the real Shield, on the belief that leadership should operate with transparency and not from the shadows.
Okay, so Gonzalez is talking about not wanting to operate from the shadows. And all I could hear was just someone in the background screaming hypocrisy at him. They're hiding out in the middle of the ocean, well, which we didn't know at that point. They do have a really cool home base, right, being a modified aircraft carrier. Or actually, it could be, I guess, a helicarrier that doesn't hella anymore. It's just a carrier.
Well, does it not? Maybe it just wasn't hella-ing then. That. You know, because I mean, when we first saw the helicarrier in, I guess that was Avengers, right?
Oh yeah.
It was in the water, right? And they That's watched true. It take off. So maybe it just wasn't taking off.
Okay. Well, that's totally possible too, I guess. But anyway, they're hiding. They have two moles infiltrating Shield, and they're operating out of the shadows. I mean, what? Why am I supposed to trust this guy? At all.
Yeah, I know. I agree. They kept saying the real one. We want transparency, no secrets, but hey, where you been? We didn't know about you. You're not out in the open there. There's a lot of secrets there. There's a reason for it, but there's I don't know.
Well, now granted that when Gonzalez was kind of laying out his grievances about what was going on with Coulson and their issue with the way Fury ran stuff. And Lady Thomas Jefferson talks about Nick Fury and his secrets and everything like that. And the bearded guy is just like, uh-huh. And
is that Agent Beardface?
Yeah, Agent Beardface. And, you know, I'm like, no, I mean, those are all good points. From the outside, it can obviously appear like Coulson is doing something untoward. I mean, we've talked about this. It's like, wow, Coulson might be acting a little off. We're not sure what he's up to. Does he trust Bobby and Mac? Does he trust May? Is he trusting Simmons? You know, and I was just waiting for him, you know, to be like, all right, you know, I'm doing all this mysterious stuff. And then all of a sudden, happy birthday, Sky, you know, and he set up a big birthday party. It's like, oh, that's why you've been acting weird, isn't it? And so, but, you know, I see the point, and Hunter sees the point as well. He's like, you know, I will let you know that some of that stuff, you know, those are good ideas. But can this real SHIELD, do you think they can really judge Coulson from the outside, not knowing his motives or whatever else he's going through, by just having people inside going, well, he appears to be doing this? Is that reasonable?
I guess. I mean, I guess it depends on your point of view, you know? I mean, we know, I'm not sure exactly why they were why they're so upset about Coulson's secrets if they know everything that's going on. I mean, how exactly would they have handled the situation? You know how they were telling Hunter, well, look, the situation with the city, you know, the where it collapsed and Trip died and, yeah. And, you know, I mean, how would they have handled it differently? Coulson was fighting back against Hydra. He was fighting back against Hydra,
right,
while the United States government and Hydra were both trying to stop Coulson. So how exactly would Gonzalez have handled this differently? Well, I guess we know how he handled it differently. He did nothing.
He sat out, right. And what were they doing this entire time? I mean, what is really suspect about this, and that's fine. I mean, you can say that you are, you know, you have the noblest of intentions and stuff like this, but, you know, what's the quote about real evil thrives when a good man does nothing? So, you know, he just is kind of sitting back, letting everybody duke it out to, you know, kind of go in and then just pick up the pieces of what's left.
Right.
And how different is that than what SHIELD was doing with Hydra earlier? You know, it's, I don't know. It's, while I really like Edward James Olmos and he puts me at ease when he talks, he kind of makes me a little sleepy. it's just like, he's like a giant glass of warm milk and I just kind of want to cuddle up in his voice. I have to shake my head and go, no, get out of my head with your lies.
Yeah, I don't think he's lying. I just think because Coulson, you know what?
That's true. You're right.
Here's
right.
What I think.
I think he believes what he's saying.
Yes. And I think that he had along with some of the other people that he's with, I think he had a beef with Fury. I think there was probably a power struggle there. And because Coulson is Fury's main man, or at least that we know of,
yeah,
I think he's got a problem with Coulson. But when you look at it, it's really just two groups that have the same goal, the same mission, and probably a lot of the same ideals. It's just they are against each other because of who's part of the groups the groups were involved with, like Fury.
Yeah, and two different ideologies, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, partly. I mean, I guess they are different ideologies, but there's a lot of the same beliefs in there. And yet they can't...
I think they both want the same thing, but they have these... I guess what I see is they may or may not realize it, but I think they both want the same thing. They just have two different ideologies about how to go about getting there.
Yes, agreed.
Right,
agreed.
So that may be it. This also does bring up another interesting... point, though, who was Robert Gonzalez? Like, we don't know this guy from Alexander Pierce. You know, who was this guy before Hydra took over? Or, before Hydra revealed themselves, I mean. We have no idea.
No, We don't know anything. We do know that they were part of S.H.I.E.L.D., though.
Yeah, well, and because we do have the touchstone in Lady Thomas Jefferson, who was the head of the S.H.I.E.L.D. Science Academy from, I think it was like episode 6 or 7 from last season.
Okay.
So did you recognize her as such?
I don't know. No, I don't think I did.
It was the one where we went back to the academy when Fitz and Simmons went back and were big people on campus because, you know, and Donnie Gill had the ice powers and stuff. Well, she was the dean.
Yeah, I didn't remember her. Now dean, that you're saying dean that, Weaver. Yeah. I'm. Huh. Okay.
So, you know, we've got this, you know, these kind of mid-level S.H.I.E.L.D. operatives. Obviously, Gonzalez seems like he was a little bit higher, and he seems to have kind of survived kind of by the grace of God and the fact that Isabel Hartley saved him. So, you know, while a lot of other people might not have survived that were his peers, you know, he's kind of in charge. And obviously everybody, you know, respects him and stuff like that. So, but going back to his point about, you know, that they should operate with transparency, not from the shadows, not have secrets. Aren't some secrets necessary? You know, like, for example, Josh, you know, I know you get explosive flatulence after Mexican food and stuff like that. And I'm sure you wouldn't want our listeners to know about that. So I would argue that some secrets are really out there for our own good.
Yes, and can be very damaging if revealed. You know, they can call, like for example, like that thing you did in college, you know, when you needed the money.
Right.
Yeah.
So, secrets...
Which you can check later on our Facebook page to find out more about that.
Oh, well, no, I didn't authorize that.
No, okay. All right.
All right.
Gonzalez told me I could do it. It's okay. he lulled me into a sense of security when he said, like, hey, you can go ahead and post that on the... Hold on, I got to get a drink of water.
Yeah, he just takes the drink of water right Facebook. In the middle.
He's a relaxed guy, isn't he? Relaxed guy.
I know there seemed, and especially in today's society, there's a lot of discussion, you know, in the media and just between individuals about, you know, rights to privacy and secrecy and how much should the government, you know, how transparent should the government be? And, you know, it's weird because I find myself shouting certain things at the TV show here. but when I think about it, it's like I actually feel like I have a different stance against the same issues on S.H.I.E.L.D. than I do in real life. You know, it's there are elements of the show where I'm like, well, that's totally ridiculous. Of course, you know, we need to have secrets there, whereas when stuff's happening in the real world, I might be saying something like, this is crazy. Why are you guys keeping all this stuff secret? Like, what else are you keeping from us? So it's weird how the nature, at least to me, how the nature of the story that is being told by the television show changes the way that I perceive issues that matter to me in real life and stuff like that.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, maybe, and again, this is kind of what I was talking about with Gonzalez. Given the context, you kind of understand why those secrets are necessary, you know, and I think we hear that a lot in our culture, especially with, you know, the pundits on all the news programs that are everywhere. It's just, you know, they want to know everything. They think we have the right to know everything. We're entitled to know everything that's going on. And yet when we find out some of those secrets, just like Skye, you know, when Skye found out all that stuff about her father, is she better off now? She doesn't think so.
Right. Right.
So it, given the context, if you understand why the secrets are kept, then you kind of have a better sense of it, which is why, like, when you're watching the show, it's like those people that don't like magicians because they just want to know how it's done, as opposed to the people that watch it because it's entertaining and they understand, look, if I know how it's done, it ruins the whole thing, you know, right. messes it up. I guess it's not just like that, but you kind of understand what I'm saying.
No. Yeah. It's there are some people that have anxiety when they don't have all the answers there. Like they see point A and point D and they just don't understand how you got from one place to another. They need to see the steps. And there are other people that take more stuff on faith or, you know, understand that like, well, we're at this point now. It doesn't necessarily matter how we got here, but now that we're here, let's discuss, was this a good way to get here? Was this not a good way to get here? And let's try to change that in the future. I think those might be some of the differences for that. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it sounds like this stuff is going to be coming to a head real quick. I mean, like in the next 6 to 12 hours here, based on kind of the timelines, because Hunter escapes and
really easily too. Well, I mean, I know that Bobby kind of let him go in part of it, but you know, she really only let him open the door. After that, he kind of had to fight his way out.
and then he kind of opens the door and just kind of walks through the, it's like he's whistling through the graveyard, through the little command center, and then takes off on a run. But I mean, how about that reveal? Like I thought he was going to be in an underground, bunker, like, the bases we saw the team operating in at the beginning of the season, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden, boom, you know, he's on a ship in the middle of the ocean. It's, you know, somewhere.
Am I forgetting a transition here? Now, how when Mac brought him to Gonzales, had they come from somewhere, or had Hunter been locked up there the whole time?
I think it just continued directly from the end of last episode. So they, Hunter's chained up under the sink, wherever, in the safe house.
Okay.
They put a bag over his head, and then the bag comes off, and he's in a hallway. And Mac's like, I got to tell you who I work for, the real Shield. And then I think they immediately led him into the room with Gonzales.
So you're saying they've got pizza and beer on the helicarrier?
They probably do have pizza and beer.
Okay, wow. All right. That's not out of the realm of possibility, you know, it's...
And submersibles and a bunch of...
Probably right next to the Orange jets. Julius. And
you go downstairs to the gym and you make a left at the Starbucks and you can get whatever you want. I'm sure they've got a food court inside there as well. yeah, but you're right. What's interesting to me is where Bobby's loyalties lie. Mm-hmm. She's good. Like... Coulson believes her, or at least says to Hunter that she's hard to read last episode. And we discussed whether or not he really thinks, whether Coulson thinks that something else is up. So she says that she's not going to stop Hunter. And then she adds, but everybody else will. But, you know, he's totally competent and is able to get out of there on his own. And then when it comes to her talking with Gonzales again, I think it was Tomas, Kirk Arcevedo.
Agent Beardface, right?
No, that was Agent Hot Under the Collar.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay.
From Fringe. The guy from Fringe, who was next to Agent Beardface. Beardface, okay. I just think, went, mm-hmm, uh-uh, mm-hmm. I think he might have had one other line.
His beard was too thick.
But, you know, they question Bobby's loyalties, and she's like, you know, I think Gonzales then asks her, you know, or says, you know, who are you loyal to? And she says, oh, I'm still loyal to us. And he's like, oh, that's good enough for me. And it's like,
well, he's easy.
he is easy. Is he being truthful? Is he lying? Is he just dumbfounded by her good looks? I mean, what's your thoughts?
Oh, I'm dumbfounded by her good looks. Right. Oh, you mean what are my thoughts about him? Oh, I gotcha.
Focus on the episode here.
Okay.
Where's her loyalty?
Here, I'll tell you where I think. Now, as far as him, I'm not sure. He's okay. Even harder to read than she is. But here's where I think her loyalties are. I think she's really, truly loyal to both of them because I think she believes they're both right. She believes they're both the good guys.
Shields.
Both shields, yes. I think she, you know, I think she thinks that both of them have good, valid points, and I think she thinks that both of them are working towards something right. You know, the whether it's the same ultimate goal or not, it's both all for the right reason, right?
Great way to not pick a side there.
Well, no, this is what this is why I think. Number one, this is why I think both Gonzalez and Coulson trust her. And I think this is why she kind of, you know, kind of hesitates whenever anybody kind of asks her these questions. Now, if you're talking about Mac, I think Mac is loyal to Gonzalez's shield. And I think he it's pretty clear, you know, the way he behaves and acts. And man, he just all of a sudden stopped being a good actor around, you know, May and Coulson. When he came back,
because
all of a sudden they didn't.
Yeah. So, is there anything else? Nope.
Is it
okay?
Like, he was John Lovitz. He was. Have you seen Hunter? Hunter. Yeah, yeah. That's the ticket. Yeah, he was around the corner getting a burger. You know, I mean, he clearly was lying. So, but I think Bobby is torn. I think she wants to support them both. I think she wants to be on both of their sides and doesn't want to betray either one of them. But in the process, that can be very dangerous because then neither one of them will trust her. But
yeah,
so well, that doesn't answer your question where her loyalties lie because I don't think even she really knows.
I was going to say she may not know because she hasn't really been tested yet, but she has been tested. I mean, she's constantly being tested here about this and. It's the same issue that Hunter has. I think she is loyal, personally, this is my belief, that she's loyal to whoever she's dealing with at the moment. Because Hunter was talking about, you know, the mission that they were on and, you know, kind of thinking back about this. And it's like, yeah, but you still, you know, oh, you know, that's right. We made love or whatever it was out in the desert. But you still got the intel from me. You know, it's just... She's a user and she's a liar and she's a spy before she's anything else. So it's like, oh, hey, I need to get
a supermodel too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And she's a mole. Mole, mole. Oh. But I think I don't want to say she's loyal just to herself because it's like situational. And it feels like it's one of those things at this point that she just can't turn off. It's just – that's just how she is.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Now, I would say Hunter's loyal to himself. But, yeah, I agree with you, but not Bobby.
Hunter is probably primarily looking to save his own skin, but I think he wants to tell Coulson what's going on. I mean, I feel like he's probably headed back to talk to them, whether or not he makes it in time before Bobby gets there. Because – now, I was unclear. Can he – not call for help until 12 hours or was it only 12 hours until he got to land?
I think it was he couldn't call for help for 12 hours.
Okay. And she only needs
that's how I took it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like there was some, cause he had turned off his GPS so they couldn't know where he was. That was all very convenient. Obviously he knows how to use one of these submersibles. But yeah, I think he will try to, you know, let Coulson know that they're in danger if at all possible. I just don't know if he's going to make it in time. And I feel like this should probably all come to a head next week. It sounds like it seems like they're just moving the stuff along, you know, super quick here. So,
well, based on the print for next week's episode that was revealed on Entertainment Weekly, you know, the weekly prints that they've been doing.
Oh, yeah.
I would say that it's going to be a very heavy Mockingbird episode with Bobby. Really cool print of Bobby this week. Very, very different than we've seen so far.
Yeah, very nice. Yep.
So I'm looking forward to that. I like this struggle that she's going through. And I like Hunter a lot, too. So I'm interested to see where they kind of take those two.
Yeah. I got to say, I do kind of like the give and take relationship there. And I really, deep down, I like Bobby's character and I want to see her stick around. So, you know, I hope things shake out okay. And hope that they, you know, don't kill her off or anything like that. I can see if they just make her go away for a while. But we'll see what's going on. All right. Well, we've got a couple pieces of feedback here that we wanted to read. Why don't you take the first one here and let us know what this person wanted to tell us.
Well, we got an email from Mark. So I want to thank him for writing in, and I want to read some of what he is talking about some characters that he likes from last season, but they haven't really seen them in season two yet. So the first one is Ian Quinn, and you remember Ian Quinn. That was kind of early on in the season when Skye was learning to be real an agent, mm-hmm. and then they brought him back for several nasty little incidents. But so he says, number one's Ian Quinn. Now, I don't necessarily like this fellow, but he seemed very important. He has possession of the Gravitonium, a massive weapon. He's kind of a two-in-one package because he has Graviton with him as well, the character.
Right.
Now, is that the case? Do you think he still has the Gravitonium, or did that kind of get misplaced with the whole Hydra taking over issue?
Hmm. I think he probably still has that, and I feel that, you know, he's kind of an industrialist, so maybe he's out there experimenting with it, and the next time we see Ian Quinn come back, we'll see a fully formed Graviton, rather than getting the origin story right there at the top. We'll get to see some stuff in a flashback, possibly. But that'd be great. Well, I'd love to see Quinn come back as well, because I forgot how much I enjoyed him.
Yeah, I agree with Mark. I do like him, and you know, I hope that they don't just throw out that character, because that was kind of a good setup for Graviton. So I'm interested in seeing that.
I think they'll come back to it. They just are taking their time.
Okay. All right. Yeah, they've had some things to deal with. So number two is Mike Peterson / Deathlok. I love this character and would like to see how he has fared so far with his re-entry into society. He would be a real good one they could bring back for probably just an episode or two, you know, maybe a small arc. But he could somehow help out with something that they're doing, or maybe be the problem with something they have
to deal with.
Right,
because he's kind of on his own right now.
Mm-hmm.
So he has no one, you know, he's in his control of his own destiny, much like Ward is. So it's interesting that, you know, all these people that used to kind of be under this one umbrella of S.H.I.E.L.D., which had some Hydra under it, now because that has fractured, all these little, you know, these little shards are all over the place, and we're kind of going through, sifting through and seeing what everybody's up to.
Right. Right. Well, and his number three, his last character here is Agent Blake. Now, you remember Agent Blake, he's been in a couple episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I think he was in
the Item 47 short that was on the Avengers DVD, I believe.
Avengers, okay, that was that one, okay. And he says, now he was as high as a rank as Coulson was, I think. I think that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, he was level, either level 7 or level 6. He was pretty high, though.
He was pretty close, yeah. So, and he got stomped by Deathlok and put into the hospital in that scene. I think he even kind of sacrificed himself for somebody.
Right. Yeah, that was at the racetrack, I believe. Yep.
And we haven't seen Agent Blake since. Hydra supposedly eliminated everyone level 8 and higher, except for, you know, Phil, of course. And so does that mean that he was killed? Has he recovered? Where is he? Is he in Tahiti? What's he doing? I like the character of Agent Blake. You know, he hasn't ever had a real big part, but he's kind of an interesting idea for an agent, kind of just this mellow kind of, you know, whatever kind of character.
Yeah.
And I like that dynamic against other people. So it's kind of the same way I like Patton Oswalt's character. Mm-hmm. It kind of plays off of Coulson and some of the other characters when they need a little bit of comedy in there.
Yeah.
Better than Talbot, anyway.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Good list, Mark. I think I think two out of those three will probably return at some point. I would have to say Agent Blake is probably on the lower end of that list. I don't know that he would. I don't know there's anything else for them to do with him, because, you know, he was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and he had shown up in some of the shorts, or in that short, and then they put him in the episodes to kind of tie that stuff together, but I don't really see a place for him at this point, so I guess we'll see.
If they need some random agent for some purpose, they might bring somebody like him back.
So we got another message on Facebook from Michael, and now this wasn't in response to anything that we had put out there, but he gave a little bit of information about the aircraft carrier reveal. And he says that if the sea is calm enough, then a carrier could seem like a building underfoot. So this is why, you know, why Hunter wouldn't have recognized that he was on an aircraft carrier in the, you know, hours or whatever the lead up to him running outside would be. And being that none of the rolling chairs are rolling or secured to prevent rolling, we have to assume that the ship isn't rocking. But the environment would be immediately identifiable to anybody familiar with Navy ships. I'm not sure if it stood out to anybody else. I'm not familiar with Navy ships, so I did not recognize it. I thought it, and it probably was actually the same physical set they were using for some of the bunker scenes in the beginning of the season with the Patton Oswalt bunkers that they were visiting.
Now, when he says it'd be identifiable to anyone familiar with Navy ships, is he referring to Hunter? Because I think Hunter, the only places he ever was since he's been taken by Mac was, you know, locked away in that bathroom or in that room with Gonzalez, right?
Right. But, I mean, he walked down the hallway and stuff like that. So, I mean, if you're – I mean, I think what Michael might be saying is that on a ship, like the hallways are going to look familiar. All aircraft carriers are probably built similarly to one another, as are, you know, different naval vessels. Uh-huh. So, and again, not necessarily that Hunter would be familiar with any of that stuff, but – I think what Michael's just saying is if you were familiar with a Navy ship and you were on an aircraft carrier, but you didn't know you were on an aircraft carrier, like because you were hooded and taken in, you might recognize that you were on a naval ship.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
That's where I was going. That's what I saw. And then he says that the bullseye would be a dead giveaway. Now, I'm not sure if he's referring to something. I was looking. I don't remember seeing anything that looked like a bullseye, but I may have missed something, and I'm thinking he might mean like some landing platform outside. But again, Hunter was hooded while, you know, being transported to and into the carrier, so I'm not sure what that has to do with. But this is the part that I thought that was really kind of interesting. So when Hunter's leaving or escaping, he stands in front of a door, and there's a bunch of letters and numbers posted behind him. Black on yellow. And I don't have the list of numbers here, but Michael goes on to say that 01 or 01, I think it's an O, 01 level, which is the first deck above the main deck, forward bulkhead is at frame 77, because I think that was another number we saw, and he says the aft bulkhead is frame 78. It's starboard, and so this is where the door that he came out of, so this is how you would identify where he was on the ship. It's starboard of the center line. The I at the end of the first line should be an L, though, so that was probably just a typo on the set designer. And then S-5 division is responsible for the boat, or this section of the boat, I guess. So that's pretty cool that, you know, there's a little sign there and you can kind of tell a lot of different things about it. So thank you, Michael, for posting that. Like I said, I'm not familiar with naval vessels, so that is that's pretty interesting stuff right there.
I love stuff like that. Thanks for telling me, because I have also never been on a naval vessel. I've been on a cruise ship.
I've been on the Queen Mary, but yeah, that's I think that's like a cruise ship, right?
Was that the thing in college when you needed the money? Okay. Oh, no, right. You mean the boat. Sorry. Gotcha.
So the references that I saw in this episode, not really any comic book references other than Agent 30. There is an Agent 33 in the comics, and her name is Kara. So that's cool. I felt that there was someone else that posted to our Facebook, and I forgot to look up and see who they were, and they said, why is that diner at the beginning so familiar? And I posted a quote from Pulp Fiction, because it may actually be the same diner that they used in Pulp Fiction. I'm not sure, but it was definitely an homage to Pulp Fiction, the opening scene of Pulp Fiction with Pumpkin and Honey Bunny. And then just a observation I mentioned earlier that Kirk Acevedo, who played Tomas Calderon, was sitting next to Gonzalez in this episode. So I'm just wondering, is the Fringe Division a subgroup of the real S.H.I.E.L.D., considering also that they have this nanomass technology and stuff like that. So people that watch Fringe, see if that's a, that might be an interesting little crossover for everybody there. And that was about it. I don't remember. I really didn't see too much else in there. Mm-mm. So, all right. Well, I think that's all we've got for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, Josh.
Oh, yeah. And if you enjoyed this episode for us, we would love for you to go over to iTunes and leave us some feedback. That would be fantastic. And also, we like hearing from you, too. So you can send us an email, just like Mark did. shield@randomchatter.com is where you send that. And we love reading all of your insights or speculation or opinions, for sure. And it's totally okay to disagree with me. I'm okay with that. I like hearing other people's opinions, too. Or you can visit our Twitter feed there, @AgentsPodcast is where you find us on Twitter. Or you go to Facebook, which is facebook.com/AgentsPodcast.
Josh really doesn't like people disagreeing with him at all. He was just lying about that.
Hey, don't argue with me.
Okay. You can also check out the other shows that Josh and I host here at randomchatter.com, Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. All these shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. We'd love to get more listeners coming on to the show and as the show continues into further seasons. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.